Coalition, who support redistricting reform and much in the shape that SCA 3 takes. And I think that that sets a very different kind of tone as we go into November 2006's elections, where voters have expressed in the polls that we've both conducted and also seen that they want redistricting reform, they want it to be fair and balanced, they want people to come together around the issue. And so if it's fair and politically balanced, then they approach it with a very different view. And I think that what we've got on the table right now does that.
Let me ask a couple of questions as well, because at least in my opening statement, I'm very interested in redistricting, I'm very interested in term limits, but I'm interested in legislative reform overall, and I'd like to pick your brains on this issue. I'm interested in accountability and also the role of the legislator. You know, to some extent, we're working against a clock, August 31st. Perhaps when California was first brought into statehood, you had to get here in horse and buggy, I suppose, but in this modern age, I can fly Southwest and get my peanuts. So I'm curious as to, as part of, I want to put everything on the table. Looking at the legislative calendar, in terms of looking at possible legislative reforms to perhaps like someone like Congress that we'd be able to extend in order to deal with, whether it's prison reform in a special session or redistricting reform. The size of the district has long been an issue. I now represent 850,000 people. I represent 850,000 people with a budget, a mail budget, which basically makes it prohibitive in order to communicate with constituents. And so a lot of the cynicism is oftentimes about, we don't see you, we don't hear from you, but yet my mail budget is limited. I've even, you know, in some of the polling and testimony we've received, something as simple as town halls, having again to that availability. And to some extent, I think there's a question of, are you a district legislator or a policy legislator? Because to a large extent, depending almost on what role we expect, are we a trustee of the district or what are we? I'm curious in some of these issues of greater accountability, no matter what we may do with redistricting or term limits, I think the broader question of accountability and the type of legislators that we want to see. And then finally, the other issue I would throw out is, let's say that we could come together by the time the clock ticks and put something forward. A lot of folks are concerned it's already a crowded ballot. So to put something on a ballot in 2006, there's, I think, the real pros to work, and I really am very pleased that this conference committee has come together to, I think, really, in a sense, jumpstart and put forward a process that had stalled. That's how I look at this, and make it real as far as trying to move us forward. But at the end of the day, we do have a crowded ballot and some controversial issues. And taking a look at what's happened in Connecticut even, is there simply a no, 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 which I don't think we want. So I know there's a lot of thoughts there, but I'd like your thoughts on my thoughts. And not just to me, to each other.
Well, Madam Chair, I'd be glad to start part of that. I think with respect to the issue of 2006 versus 2008, a couple of thoughts. One is, we know what the 2006 ballot looks like. We have no idea what the 2008 ballot looks like. It could be more crowded, it could be less crowded. We know in 2006, the Republican and Democrat nominees for governor both support redistricting reform and are quite specific in what it is they will support. We don't know who's going to be the governor in 2008 whether they would campaign for or against such a thing. We know what the field is right now, and it seems to me that you can make a strong argument for putting a measure on this ballot. There is a ready-to-go coalition ready to support redistricting reform now. And I think it is both wide and deep in the civic community and it is in the political community. I don't know what is going to happen in 2008. And so I think that it's fair for you to raise the issue of, my goodness, it is a crowded ballot. I would guess most California ballots are going to look quite similar. And so I would say that given the other circumstances that are present here, you may have as good or better an opportunity now than you've had in the recent past and likely to have in the future.
others, and also get you on the broader issues of accountability as well. Jean?
I think you raised some excellent and difficult questions that probably aren't best addressed in many cases through the ballot box. I think a lot of it certainly pertains to the rules of the House and how the houses and how the legislature structures itself. I think that said, I think certainly changing the staffing structure and the reward structure within the legislature, the committee structure, potentially devoting more staff resources to oversight would be one way to address that. I think back, and I'm getting at the point in life where my memory isn't what it once was. I think about the time that I left the staff of the Assembly in 94, 95, there was some thought even of having alternate years where you would legislate 1 year of a two-year session, do oversight in the second year. And I think maybe drawing a hard and fast rule might not solve all problems, but I think certainly having dedicated staff resources, potentially dedicated committee resources to oversight could help do that. And I think having a more of a practice within the rules of policy committees that you build in, rules for program evaluations using sunset dates within various programs and policies certainly helps get you there. I think in terms of the size of the legislature, it's such a tough one in a state the size of California. I was in New Mexico not long ago, and I asked the friend I was staying with, how big is a House seat in New Mexico? And she's, you know, eight blocks that way, four blocks that way in Albuquerque. And, you know, that's not going to happen in California unless you got to a size that would not be and it would be a very unwieldy body for you to work in. I think that I will leave it at that, but I certainly think that is something that a lot, actually I'll say one more thing in terms of the length of time, and we do a lot of work with groups, community-based groups around the state, and a lot of training with community-based groups, and there is a real tension among your constituents to how to have a voice in Sacramento. And I certainly see some benefits of having, particularly when it is a very limited issue, potentially something like prison reform, having an extended session. I think one of the things that we hear is that this is such a full-time process that unless you have paid representation, a lobbyist, it's hard to have an effective voice in Sacramento. And I think to the extent you begin to legislate longer, you make the role of the paid lobbyist even that much more important, because people can't come up from your districts to be part of the hearing process even more than they already can. It's a long process in California, and that's very demanding for people who are not in Sacramento.
Senator Lowenthal.
Yeah. You know, that's a very good question about when to do something, whether this is the time to put a redistricting proposal, let's say, on this ballot or not. But if we step back for a moment and just think about it, this has been a very interesting year. We have put out a budget pretty much on time. We've placed bonds on the ballot that required a two-thirds vote and the cooperation of the governor. And we're talking about doing something that is historic. And let's not forget, this is a historic moment. This is a moment, not what took place in other states where an initiative came from the people and bypassed the legislature, but this could be a moment after much vetting where the legislature voluntarily puts on the ballot an initiative to give up some of its own power. That is an amazing thing. Let's not forget this moment. That is an amazing issue that we will be doing. That will not hurt other issues. That is a very positive statement that we are doing this, and not forget it. That doesn't mean we have the proposal there. But do not underestimate the significance of a legislature doing this and what this message says to the people of California.
Actually, Senator, if I can build on that point, not only will I think it not harm you, I think it will help you. For anyone at this on this committee or in this room who would like to see a transportation bond passed this November, which looks likely. For anyone in this panel or in this room who would like to see a schools or a levies bond passed, which look more tenuous, or for anyone on this panel who would like to see a housing bond passed, which at this point is beginning to look like a very, very dicey proposition, the credibility of the legislature is on the ballot with each of those four bond measures. And I think for this body to take the steps of reforming itself, to say to the people of California, we are going to hold ourselves accountable. We are going to give you back your democracy. I think that would lend such an added level of credibility to the members of this body, again, not individually but collectively, but I think it would be of immeasurable benefit to your efforts to pass one or more of these bond measures. Yeah, the senator's implication is the right one. There are always reasons not to act on this. And every single one of you and every single one of your colleagues, if you do not act, will be reelected for as long as term limits allow you to be. But I would suggest to you that if redistricting reform of the type we're talking about is accomplished, most of you will be reelected. The natural advantages of incumbency and your accomplishments in office give you a tremendous advantage in that regard. But in addition to serving out the remainder of your time in the State Assembly or in the State Senate, you will be remembered as part of the state legislature that gave democracy back to the people of California. And in the short run, that's something that can have profound implications as it relates to transportation, as it relates to levies, as it relates to housing, as it relates to school bonds. In the long run, it's something you're going to be remembered for long after you've left here, voluntarily or otherwise.
Roundtable, each other? Members?
This is Kathy. This is Kathy Fung with California Common Cause. Senator Romero, you've raised a lot of issues that I think we all recognize need to be addressed at some point or another in terms of governance reform. The one that struck me that we've certainly talked about within our membership and our board is the huge population that each senator and assembly member must now represent, because we are stuck with a legislature that is fixed at 40 senators and 80 assembly members, while the population of California is growing exponentially. And so, as you say, you know, you are representing nearly a million people, and how you can be responsive to that many people is very hard to see. What we see is that redistricting reform is in many ways a gateway issue to being able to address a lot of these other issues. Folks have said before that a lot of it does have to do with timing. If the legislature takes the historic step of giving up the power to draw their own districts, they are signaling to the voters that you can have confidence and trust in us again. And so that when future proposals are brought up, whether it's term limits or expanding the number of seats in the legislature or moving to, you know, other more radical systems like multi-member districts, that any of those proposals will be viewed with a less jaundiced eye by the voters, because they will be seen as from the legislature as something that this legislature has already proven itself to not be just self-serving, but to really be thinking about the larger public policy issues that folks care about. I see redistricting reform specifically as a gateway issue to changing the size of the size of the legislature, because right now the way redistricting is done, you know, everybody has a very vested interest in the size and shape of their district, because when it's redistricted, it will determine, you know, the future of their careers for the next 6, 8, you know, or more years. And if we can divest people's direct interest, incumbents' direct interest in a district as belonging to them, then we can talk about expanding the number of districts or changing the way they're configured, because they're no longer in a personal fight to shape the way that that district will look. And an outside body proposing something like that will be much better received than the legislators proposing it, which will just be seen as, oh, you're just trying to make jobs for more politicians, as we've seen in our attempts in Los Angeles to try to expand the city council. So, again, I think that, you know, if we think of redistricting reform as a gateway issue, it allows us really to start to address some of the very much needed reforms that you brought up. And I think a lot of our organizations would be very much on board with you the support discussion of that.
Thank you. Others? Any then, I guess we're coming to a conclusion on this roundtable. Any concluding comments? All right, then we thank you very much for being with us today. We respectfully request your participation on Sunday with us. Remember, on Sunday, we're going to go ahead and kind of get a little bit more into what are some remedies, solutions, ideas. We would also appreciate, and we are collecting binders for the members that we're going to go ahead and put into the record. A lot of materials here, if people are interested in taking a look at these will be made available, of course. We would be interested in any particular studies, reports, memos that reflect all of these issues on looking at election legislative reforms, whether they be redistricting, whether they be related to term limits, whether they be related to accountability issues. I mean, certainly even another issue that we didn't even touch on is looking at the budgeting process really to a large extent and the impact that certainly term limits has on budgeting. So, and also lobbyists as well, too, in terms of who becomes empowered. There are various positions as to whether how empowered the third house has become in relation to term limits and what occurs. So there's much that I know that, of course, in this hearing today, we're not going to be able to hear from this roundtable, but we want to thank you being here and participating in what I consider to be really a very opportune time for us to meet, to confer, to dialogue, and then to hopefully be able to act before the clock finally ticks. So thank you so very much for your participation. Let's move forward then to public comment. We have one individual, of course, who has signed up for public comment, Ted Costa. Will you please join us? He did leave. All right. Any other members from the public who wish to join us at this time? Mr. Estrada, are you walking back? Okay. Okay. Well, I think we have been quite good. We said we would finish at 3:30, and actually we have finished right around 3:30. So I want to thank all the members of the committee for being here today. We will reconvene Sunday at 2:30 in which room? In this room. With that, let me go ahead and just thank everybody, and we'll be back on Sunday afternoon. Thank you for participating today. This meeting is now adjourned.